Blog Talk Radio.
Perhaps we leased to NPR.
I lost my show. But at the same time, I had a feeling that things were going to get tighter and tighter because on liberal talk shows. So that's why I thank Blog Talk Radio for coming around. And I believe it was actually August of 2006 was when they opened up. And I got on, I believe, in November that year. I heard about it. And through the internet and through the industry, and I was really quite surprised the industry, and I was happy to hear it. And so when we did it, we were on in its infancy, right at its beginning, and I was glad that I had my audience because I was able to create I already had an audience for Blog Talk because of my FM show. I was able to promote it on my FM show for my Blog Talk show, and it did well, and it has done very well over the years, and we're now up to we've well over I think we're over 150,000 listeners, and that's a remarkable feat as far as I'm concerned. I mean, not for everybody, but I mean for me, I'm very, very pleased, and my website is achieving actually it's got even a I'm so impressed with the fact that with this new website, because it's finally because we actually have a Google rating. Imagine that. Yeah, Google's actually rated our website. As far as I think it's a 2. Yeah, 2. Not that great, but it means that you get over 20 or 30,000 visitors every month. Readers. And since my website is strictly all my own work, primarily all my I do have other people's videos and stuff on there, but my own articles, essentially, I have links to other sites and, make reference to other people's works, but primarily it's all my own essays and artwork and photography and so on. But I wanted to, I'm pleased that I'm reaching more people because, and that only means that my delivery vehicles are more accessible and better than they were. And I want to thank everybody who listens to my programs and follows us. So what I'm going to do tonight is, before I get off subject, is I wanted to take you back in history with me. I've got a degree in history. That was my major in in American and European history, but essentially, why I studied history in college was that, and I studied under some interesting historians. But what made me pleased was that I was introduced to historical analysis, okay, and based upon writing papers and so on, was a big issue. But what was important was collecting the the information and then comparing it with each other and then seeking out kind of a you're kind of like an investigator, but you appreciate the timely notations like the newspapers of old times, or the old prints, or the old, hieroglyphs, or whatever. They were able to capture, if you will, that part of history. Okay, that history is such an elusive. It's like the sands of time. It's impossible. To calculate what it is and so on. So your best way to find a trail to truth, if you will, of what happened 1,000 years ago or what's happening now, right? And then trying to create a historical, factual link to try to explain the cause of the events happening now. Otherwise, if there's no connection to anything in the past, then everything we experience now is new, and that's not true, because what it is that we are the product, if you will, of our past. I mean, we are the product of reincarnation. We are the product of resurrection. We are the product of ascension. We are the product of continued knowledge. That's what we are. And we are spiritual beings to the extent that we pursue the height of understanding ourselves when we study history, when we respect history, and when we seize history and note it so that we can backtrack to that period of time and understand where we were at that time as well as where we are now. And it gives you such a remarkable perspective on your own growth, right? Your own tolerance. Well, hell, the fact that you're actually alive, you know, 7 years later is freaking phenomenal. You know what I mean? You can't even think what's going to happen 7 years from now. You know what I'm saying? But you can remember exactly what you felt and what you felt, what was going on 7 years ago to that date, to that time. And if you write it down, you know. So that was what my entire website was designed for back in November. It was completed by Rob Brinkman back in November 2004. And my show started in 2003. I started my first blog in 2003. The guy who built it for me, you know, fucked the whole thing. He screwed the whole thing up, and you know, and we got in a big argument. And he's still a friend of mine now. I see him once in a while, he's a Facebooker. But you know, and I like the guy, but you know, he messed me up. But anyway, when I met Rob a year later, we became fast friends, and we understood. We had a lot in common, even though he's like almost 20 years younger than me. But he's a bright guy and helpful guy and knowledgeable guy. But we developed a team, and we set up this whole site. And because I believe me, I didn't know anything about it. I was into television and radio at the time, but I didn't understand. Building a website today is totally different than building one when Rob built mine back 8 years ago. The technology was different. It was much more difficult. It was much more code. And you know, now today you have preset pages and things. But my new website is that Rob built is a WordPress. But you know, he designed it and set it up, and I designed each particular page. But and wrote every page, but Rob was the genius behind, you know, the design, and he's an accomplished artist anyway. But the thing that's important to understand, and why I'm talking this way tonight, is because I want to take you back in time, but I have to ask you to be patient with me, because this journey back in time is personal and public, because my life is both. And you know me by now if you're listening, to any of my programs, that I don't know, you know me. and I'm basically the way I am on radio. But I wanted to back in 2005. Okay. We had just gone through the election, the 2004 election, and if you were on radio or involved with politics at all or anything, you pretty much were outraged, you know, absolutely outraged. And he probably went to a rally, right, like what I did, at a huge rally in Washington, D.C. And I wrote about that, what happened, which was very, 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 very bad. But I guess let me start the year. I'm just going to read a couple from 2005. But let me start the year saying with this. I had these all selected, but I've been changing my mind for some time now as to what I feel is most important. Since I'm taking you for a time ride back to 2005, I guess I can start with this one. Having been on radio and experienced, and seen the wars come on, you got to remember, in February. 2005. I wrote this particular article on the 15th, February 15th, and it's called "I'm Running Out of Hatred." And I want to take you back. It's only a three-paragraph, not a very long article, but I wanted to put it in because I felt it gave it identified the mood, not only that I was in, but the reason why. And the reason I feel that the entire country was might have felt the same way for a while after the after Bush won, Kerry conceded 2004. If you were a liberal, you probably felt this way. I woke up this morning with a sense of loss and emptiness that I couldn't understand now. Until now, at this writing, it became apparent to me after listening to Rush Limbaugh for 5 minutes today that my sick and empty feeling was caused by my utter contempt of what the Democrats and the Republicans did in the last election. My rage and contempt was rooted much deeper than I had originally thought. It was in the center of my soul. That place that the Christian right so wrongfully claim as their hallowed and sacred ground. That place that a true patriot knows well and frequents often. That center of conscience that identifies the wicked and the godly. Thoughts of war, death, fear, corruption, and cynicism veil our center soul until we become lost and mad with anxiety, eager to accept fate or a fool. Our guide. I realized today that my outrage was more of a cover-up for my total sense of helplessness in the struggle between good and wicked politics. I have been rendered powerless, except for my motor skills, in combating the wickedness that has invaded my government. Since the Democratic concession of 2 fraudulent elections, I have come to realize that I no longer have even the simplest democratic freedom left, and that's the right to a free and fair election and the assurance that my solitary vote will even be counted. So today I have replaced my hatred for the Democrats and Republicans with repulsion and pity, the way one looks at a dead man who betrayed everyone he knew and died from his own reckless excesses, is mourned by no one. I no longer fear or hate Bush or the Republicans. I only fear that subconsciously my healthy rage has turned into a sick indifference and that I will care less and less about the world and people around me until I become like they who I once so abhorrently despised. I felt that in 2015, February 15th, 2005. And I wrote about that because we were just a mess, you know. It was just a mess. You had to resign to the fact that Bush stole two elections. You know, and not a damn thing you could do about it. Well, let me just say that this is a trilogy.
George Bush was still in office, and
general named Peter Tace, right, who made a major statement. He was the Marine general, right? And I wanted to read this because it's very relevant to exactly to what basically the opposition to gays in the United States come from men like this. The misguided morality of General Peter Pace. All hail the moral Marine, General Peter Pace, the only Askissing general left in the Pentagon, the only moral Marine who thinks he can lead only his morally wavered troops to victory. Our only morons left to lead the Bush wars. It is simply unbelievable that a Marine general could be so absolutely ignorant. According to a recent article by the Associated Press, there are 65,000 gay and lesbian troops currently serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. General Peter Pace, the four-star general in charge of the Iraqi slaughter, stated publicly that it is immoral to be gay. How could this man have lived so long in the U.S. military to be so stupid? How could he possibly equate a soldier's sexual orientation as morally inferior to his own crimes and bloodlust? Here is a man who can indifferently order the deaths of thousands of innocent Iraqis and label them as collateral damage. Here is a general who can give his salute in obedience to a completely amoral president. Here is a man who has ordered the burning and bombing of villages and cities and the torture and rape of Iraqi and Afghani men, women, and children, and the pillaging and destruction of entire civilizations. Here is a trained psychopathic killer who has the sickness of mind to call 65,000 soldiers in his army immoral, determined solely on his own personal and ethical abhorrence to their sexual orientation. What kind of insane hypocrisy plagues this man? Who in his right mind can take him seriously? Instead of being institutionalized in a hospital for the criminally insane, he is placed by the Bush administration in charge of the Iraq war. Who in hell is kidding who? What kind of complete and utter insanity are we witnessing? If a moron of such high moral standing can attack the character of 65,000 men and women serving in the U.S. Armed Services, what must he think of the rest of the people in this country he is supposed to be defending? General Peter Pace says he will not apologize to the 65,000 gay servicemen and women that he has been appointed to lead into war. If I were a gay individual in the military, I would never hide my head in shame and silence from the directives of such incomplete idiot. If I were gay, I would be marching my ass off proudly in high heels and full feathered regalia in a front line of the great moral general's troop inspections. What would I have to lose? I might gain a full military discharge and my self-respect. What will happen to General Peter Pace if the cross-dressing, three times married Rudy Giuliani becomes the next Republican president? Will the moral general stand at attention and salute Madam Giuliani, who's wearing a thong and high heels and getting it on annually with his taxpayer-paid-for private secretary in the Oval Office and closed closeted cabinet meetings? Get real, General Peter Pace, before the American people and people around the world are reminded of the other general meeting of your first name. So, back in 2007, that SOP, General Pace, you know, called 65,000 people and the servicemen, women, immoral. The hypocrisy is bleeding all over history. You know, and it would be so interesting. This guy would probably put a gun to his own head and blow it off. All right, if the Supreme Court gave gays the right to be married. Besides, most people who are so abhorrently opposed to things like that, it's either through ignorance or through their own fear of homosexuality. And that fear, meaning their own homosexuality. My next article is, I wrote in 2007 as well. I wrote this in June of 2007 when we were going through the trying to get the passage of the, everyone was trying to pass the immigration bill, which the Republicans refused. Which was good, you know, Republicans and Democrats. I think it was a good idea. It gave amnesty to 20 million people. Now, it's been on course again, but now with the support of the Republicans, because they just lost the last election, and they realized that, you know, illegal aliens are the way to go, you know. They're the people that are going to overrun the country and elect the new president. They elected Obama. That doesn't mean anything. All it means is it's just a blatant hypocrisy on their part. But what I did in this essay, I think I capsulized it. It's a little longer than most. It's about two pages. But I talk about Americans and illegal immigration and trying to context it in a time when Lou Dobbs was on the air and everybody was fighting about this issue. Over Americans and illegal immigration. June 25th, 2007. The illegal immigration issue is perhaps the most volatile and important issue facing Americans today, next to our unconstitutional involvement in Iraq. But their strange and abhorrent actions, the President and the Congress have shown their truest colors to the American people. Anyone supporting the immigration bill in the Senate is not working for the American people. Anyone who is pushing this bill for amnesty of illegal aliens and limited border security are attempting to legalize a foreign invasion of 12 to 20 million illegal aliens and is opening the gates and borders for millions of others who will overwhelm and destroy this nation. No other country in the world or history of the world has tolerated without resistance such a foreign invasion on their soil. As in every invasion of a country, there have always been traitors who have opened the gates to the invaders. History has proven time and again this truth. The Roman Empire was destroyed this way. The incompetent and insane emperors, followed by a complicit Senate, passed laws that accepted barbarians and foreign people into their cities and countries without respect and against the majority will of Roman citizens. There are traitors in our government. We all know this. It is not a surprise to many of us. They are the President, Vice President, House of Representatives, Senate, and Supreme Court. Some of the traitors are bought off by corporations. Others may be blackmailed by powerful lobbyists or by foreign governments. Some are simply selling out the American people to the highest bidder. We know who they are. We see them on television every day and night. Their faces are as familiar to us as those of our own co-workers or neighbors. Ted Kennedy, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, Rudy Giuliani, John McCain, Bill Clinton, J.H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, Tony Snow, every member of the cabinet, of the Bush cabinet and administration and every national news anchor person that distorts or censors the truth, every covering up and paid for pundit, anyone and everyone who is not offended or outraged by the explicit treason of those supporting this immigration bill is either a traitor or is not aware of the immigration bill that would give amnesty to 20 million illegal aliens. Are the majority of legalized and natural-born citizens all bigots and racists? I do not believe that. The majority of black and Hispanic legal and naturalized citizens are as outraged by illegal immigration as are white citizens. Those who defend illegal immigration are either illegal themselves or are profiting by illegal immigration. Employers who hire them, businesses who cater to them, relatives who want to bring more of the family members into the country, or churches who need to fill their dwindling congregations. Greed and profit are always motivated. Some people to create traitorous actions against their own country. It is the way of many. It is not my way, nor the way of hundreds of millions of decent, patriotic Americans who know all too well who the traitors are. All traitors are being exposed for their vote or no vote. These men and women, if unchecked, will bring down this country to the living standards of third world countries. This is their real aim. Mammon or Lucifer is their god. How could they believe anything else? What god of justice, righteousness, would allow thieves and wicked rulers to benefit from the crimes and treason? These men and women claim the cloak of humanitarianism for their betrayal. It is a worthy and valid cause. However, those who hold up their cross of compassion know that they are deceiving us. They raise their cross and flag as globalists, capitalists, and communist idealists who justify their looting the U.S. Treasury to support the entire world at the expense and destruction of the American middle class. Americans are a proud and determined people. Once they are alerted to the ominous threat that is facing them from within their own government and from outside, they will rise up in hundreds of millions and crush these parasitic traitors in their government. They will destroy the system that allows these traitors' actions to be committed. I believe that they will commit themselves to the reconstruction of a greater, freer, and more just nation. As an American citizen, I cannot keep my silence on this matter of illegal immigration. I cannot keep silent on the grand theft of the U.S. Treasury by the Federal Reserve that daily destroys the value of our currency with usury and inflation through the complicity of the corrupt and gluttonous selected leaders of this nation. I cannot accept that 47 million U.S. legal U.S. citizens cannot afford health care. I cannot accept that one out of four children in the U.S. live below the poverty line, and do not have adequate food, clothing, or shelter, while their parents' jobs are being outsourced to third world countries, and illegal immigration is lowering the wages of legal Americans, lowering the standards of education of the American student, and allowing the English language to become a secondary language in our schools. I cannot accept that our local and state governments are doing all they can to correct these national problems by spending their cities and towns into bankruptcy, ignoring the electorate, enriching themselves and their cronies, creating sanctuary cities, and harboring illegal aliens in defiance of state and federal laws. I do not believe, nor can I ever accept, that this nation is at risk from foreign military invasions. I will never accept that the U.S. must spend half of the total sum of all money spent in the entire world for all the world's militaries to pay for our own military defense. I will never accept that we must spend over $100 billion a year for foreign aid to bolster tyrannical regimes around the world when nearly 500,000 of our veterans are homeless or living below the poverty level. These brave men and women were made desperately ill or severely injured by serving their country. When they are abandoned and ignored by the treasonous and wicked men and women in their own government and military, Our country is being invaded. Our treasury is being looted. We are being spied upon by our government. Our personal incomes and standard of living are being destroyed by criminal and traitors, leaders and legislators. Our leaders and legislators are stealing our elections, stealing our standard of living, stealing our futures and futures of our children. Rise up, true Americans. We cannot close our eyes any longer to what is happening to us. We must send our message of anger to the White House, Senate, and House of Representatives. Form community and statewide action committees to oversee local and state governments. Reinstate our democratic power and authority. Write millions of letters to the editors of your conglomerate-controlled newspapers and television stations, demanding that they expose the truth, or you will boycott all of their sponsors. Picket their studios. We must show them our power, show them our anger, show them our commitment to their destruction and our commitment to the rebuilding of our nation on the refined principles it was founded upon. Prove to these horrid men and women that we are a nation of people worthy of dignity, freedom, and liberty, worthy of emulation throughout the world as a model of perfect government and a perfect society, and we will never tolerate anyone who would betray us or deter us from the achievement of our goal. Well, I was so pleased when I heard this. And this was June 25th, 07. And on June 28th, 07, I was so happy to be able to write this because the American people were so outraged by this bill that they put tremendous pressure on Congress and on the Senate. And the Senate bill on June 28th, 2007, by a vote of 53-46, the immigration bill was dead. A vote of 53-46 killed the immigration bill today in the Senate. I am relieved to know that enough American people made their voices heard over this issue. Now we must not stop and continue to voice our grievances loudly until the Senate and Congress begin to do what the American people want them to do. Now we must focus on getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan and be vigilant so that the traitors in the Senate don't try to sneak another immigration bill through without public debate. And what are they doing now? Same damn thing, 6 years later under Obama. All right, another immigration bill. All right. So now that the American people have found their political voices again, we must shout until the walls of Congress shake and the halls of the House and Senate and White House rumble with our demand to impeach G.W. Bush and Dick Cheney and throw out all corrupt politicians and lobbyists. We must be fierce in our demands that Congress pass an ethical finance reform bill and voting rights bill to guarantee the American people free and unrigged elections before the November 2008 elections. And we must succeed or this nation will be destroyed and tyranny will be our punishment for failure. Finally, we must demand that the media we depend on becomes responsible and objective in their reporting and be held to the highest standards of journalistic integrity. It astounds me that the only credible coverage of the immigration bill and border security issues was done by Lou Dobbs' report. No other network but CNN covered these issues better. All the other networks referred to the issue and preferred it to go away or be passed without them mentioning it. They preferred to concentrate their precious time, primetime news, to the coverage of rehashed New York Times reports and Paris Hilton's escapades. It was only after several years of the Lou Dobbs reports, continued serious and in-depth coverage of these issues, and a significant rise in CNN's ratings and a severe decline in network news ratings that provoked, through embarrassment and shame, the other networks to discuss and report on illegal immigration and border security, two of the most important issues of our time affecting the future of the United States. cabal citizens of the United States. There are enough of us this time. There were enough of us this time to stop the Senate from murdering this nation. But they will try again. Bush and Cheney and their corrupt cohorts in the House and Senate will continue to try their very best to destroy our Constitution, our sovereignty, our world standing, and rob us of our nation's wealth by corruption and global war, as they have succeeded in doing until today. It's about time all citizens of the United States got angry enough to do something to effectively change the direction of this country. I only hope, this is the new beginning of our republic and the resurrection of the true soul of the people and national spirit of the United States. I remember living through that. I remember talking about it on my radio show, writing about it, of course, in these essays. And listening to the reports, and it was that was a moment I felt remarkably proud that Americans accomplished something. I got about 15 minutes left, and I wanted to read two essays. Oh, there's so many that I should read. This is short but interesting. Because back in 2007, the House of Representatives of Congress passed the Thought Crimes Prevention Act of 2007. That's right. On October 29th, 2007. Absolutely amazing. What are thought crimes? I'm certain if everyone thought thoughts could be read, however, everyone would be a criminal. Everyone hates something or someone. Everyone has thought something that wasn't quite politically correct. The entire idea of prosecuting thought crime is absurd. That is exactly why the U.S. Congress has passed the Thought Crime Bill recently. It passed the House by 404 votes. The bill is H.R. 1955, titled the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorist Prevention Act of 2007. And I wrote this the day or so after the bill passed. Once I found out that it passed, not quietly, because the news media really didn't want you to know. And when I caught on about I believe from one of the articles, probably Alex Jones' article or David Icke or somebody, I had to write about it. Without a doubt, our federal government has become completely insane. Yes, completely insane. Based upon their passage of the Thought Crimes Prevention Act, they have completely destroyed the Constitution and declared themselves dictators. I may not be considered a radical. I may be considered a criminal for stating my belief that at least 404 members of the House of Representatives are certifiably insane. I am publishing this post as a warning to my readers. Please heed this warning. Go to roguegovernment.com or look up H.R. 1955, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007, before it is passed by the Senate, and we all know G.W. Bush will immediately sign it. Does it frighten anyone that no one in the mainstream media has talked about this bill? Is it surprised anyone that this website may be one of the only two sites on the internet that have brought this to the public's attention? This weekend, thousands of Americans in several major cities are protesting the Iraq War and Bush's administration's insane policies. No mention of these rallies were given time on any of the weekend news reports. Why? Are all of these protesters too radical? Have all of them committed thought crimes? Since our trustworthy news media has done such a skillful job at censoring all coverage of these protests, I am wondering if these protesters have been arrested and are now gathered in some Halliburton FEMA prison, or if any of the organizers have been renditioned to Uzbekistan. No one would ever know. Well, folks, I guess they and we can forget about any constitutional protections anymore. The Constitution is now only a memory and a myth. Please contact your senators and tell them to vote against the Thought Crimes Prevention Act of 2007. It may be the last legal act you will ever be able to do to save yourself, your family, and your country. I was sent an email last week regarding a protest in Boston Commons. I saw it posted on the Answer website that approximately 7,500 people showed up there. I wasn't one of them. The weather was dismal and cool. It rained a good part of the day. I was surprised so many people showed up. Boston used to pride itself for its radical and revolutionary politics. Now everyone in Boston talks or thinks about radical or revolutionary ideas is a criminal in the United States. Could the idea of the Boston Red Sox winning the World Series be considered a radical idea? If so, then every Red Sox fan in the country could be arrested for a thought crime today. Amazing, isn't it, how far we've come as a once free society and a nation. Back that time in October, they were playing the World Series. I can't remember if the Red Sox won that year. I think they did. 2007. I'm going to leave you with my last one. I think it's my last one. Probably my most, maybe my last one. I got one more after that, but I don't know if I'll have time to do it. Back in, after Barack Obama's election in 2008, it was before that. It was when he declared his candidacy in February 11th, 2008, and right about that time. And I wrote this article. I remember when I was writing it, too. Read it. Because I think in a lot of ways it's very... very interesting. Is Barack Obama the Pied Piper? I'm amazed at Obama's incredible appeal to Democrats, both young and old. I never thought someone of so little experience could pull off such a broad-based victory in the primaries. I'm still not convinced of his competence or his sincerity, and with Zbigniew Brzezinski as his chief foreign and national affairs advisor, I'm more reluctant to consider Barack Obama as president. Who would have thought that Hillary would be behind in the primary results? Who would have thought McCain would be the Republican frontrunner? Something doesn't make sense. I have to consider that the New World Order, and consider it a New World Order issue. No one has said a word about it in the debates or stump speeches. No one but bloggers have mentioned it at all. We are headed in that direction. There can be no doubt about it. Understanding the severe censorship and complete misinformation campaign by the media on the subject leaves no doubt about it happening. Under a McCain or Obama president, the presidency is in. It's a definite. Recent reports of Halliburton building massive detention centers in the U.S. and train tracks and prison boxcars and shackles may alarm a few people. Many who are reading this possibly have already read the articles I'm referring to. I've read them too on my radio shows many times. It is no longer an issue of maybe it will happen. It is happening. These things are all real and all happening now. We must face the facts that this government is preparing for a massive crackdown, all right, on its people. I believe it may happen before November 8th, but that is just a hunch. Well, it really didn't, and it's still happening now, and it's about to happen as we get more into this year. I wrote this 5 years ago, all right, so that's good that, you know, these things are all real. But the people have not allowed this crackdown yet. But this gun control business is all part of it. Keep your guns, folks. Keep your guns. I, as everyone else, would like to believe the world will be fine, peace will reign, and humanity will live happily ever after. However, I'm an optimist and a daydreamer. So please consider the source of this viewpoint. I believe in the individual courage, the compassion of people everywhere, but I know too well most people react too late to disaster and rebel singularly. Creating a collective consciousness of mass rebellion and national change takes great amounts of money, organization, commitment, collective intelligence, and cooperation. The odds of all of these factors to be engaged in one solidified movement, focused at the same time on a solitary movement of radical political and social change, are greater than most of the winning. The odds are greater than those of winning a worldwide lottery. What Obama offers is only the word change. What he will deliver may only be a few speeches with the word change in them. Change of the appearance of our president from a white W to a black Obama is about all the change we can really expect. Maybe that is enough for most Americans who have always been resilient to real change, or resistant rather to real change. As reluctant as I am to believe Hillary Clinton's words of change, there is something she has been consistently stating that I do believe. Making any changes, big or small, in this government is going to take more than stating a mantra a million times. It is going to take hard work, great vision, commitment, and tremendous cooperation among all leaders in Congress and every White House, and in the White House. It is going to take a collective courage and commitment unlike anything we have ever witnessed before in this country since the original revolution. Are we ready for this? Are we ready to witness are we ready to commit to these ourselves? Can we truly expect our elected representatives and our president to commit to positive and radical change to correct our broken system of government if the majority of our population is not committed to the same purpose and process? Communism was a collective commitment of Eastern European and many Asian nations during the 20th century. Capitalism and socialism are the obvious worldwide collective commitments in the 21st century. The U.S. is a socialist nation today. The U.S. has as many, if not more, social programs than any other country in the world. It also has more worldwide social and military commitments than any other country in the world, perhaps more than all of them combined. The U.S. is the backbone of the world economy. Our continued well-being and ability to spend money sustains every nation's economy. A blip in the U.S. economy, EKG, sends violent tremors around the world and can cause the sudden death of a country's economy. If the U.S. stopped all financial aid to Israel, Israel would collapse overnight. If we stopped aid to Iraq and pulled out our military, Iraq would completely collapse in hours. The decisions made by the existing president and the newly elected one, whoever it may be, will affect every man, woman, and child on the planet. This world can no longer afford to have such decisions made by one individual. We have seen throughout history that no one person is capable or trustworthy enough to have this responsibility, yet we continue to want to believe that one man is. I hate to admit it, but I fear my ego. I fear for the successful outcome of many judgments I must make. I strive to collect as much knowledge as I can and as much guidance as possible before I make a major decision. Most people do. How can we trust our collective judgment to place our trust and faith in one person to lead us and the world into the future? We must remember one absolute fact. No one gains the leadership of the world alone. There are thousands who make it happen, create and enact the plan, and millions of people who must be convinced of their plan. The only way to convince so many people is through the mainstream media. Knowing all we know today about the censorship and corruption of the mainstream media and the existence of a worldwide conspiracy to establish a new world order, how can any rational and intelligent human being consider anything they are told by the media to be accurate and truthful? Who is Barack Obama? He's a man from Kenya, Hawaii, and Chicago, who went to Harvard Law School and entered upon the national stage in 2004. In 4 years, he has upset the entire Democratic Party to become the frontrunner for the Democratic nominee for president in 2008. Who are the thousands of people behind him advising and running his campaign? No one knows enough about him to make sound decisions regarding his character. What is his real history and experience? Millions of Americans are being led by this magical song as the Pied Piper of change. What price does he demand from us? What promises has he made to the power brokers and the financiers who back him and fund his campaign? How will he rid our country of the rats and solve all of our problems if his backers are the biggest rats in the world and the ones causing all of our problems? Will he lead us into the mountain crack as the Pied Piper of Hamelin led all of the children of the village, if we can't afford the price of his service and refuse to pay him? That's what happened in the Pied Piper. They couldn't pay him for getting rid of all the rats. They tried to negotiate. He said, screw you. And so he played his flute, and all the children in the village were locked into a crevice in the mountain. We're never seen again. And that's pretty much what has happened. Looks like we've been led into the crevice and onto an abyss with Obama. He hasn't solved anything. Basically, he's made everything off. Paid off his backers by bailing out their banks with American tax dollars and destroying our economy. But I'd love to leave you on a happier note tonight, but geez, I just can't. my voice is coming back somewhat. I'm grateful I was able to talk. I haven't been able to really talk this much in one setting, not since I had laryngitis about a month or more ago now, and my voice came back, but not in the strongest sense. And also, I'm proud I quit smoking about 4 months ago, I'm grateful for that. Smoking cigarettes has been a habit of mine for many, 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 many years, more years than I am embarrassed to say. So, maybe I've broken away from that, I hope. But anyway, I want to thank everybody who joined me tonight, and hopefully this will become a regular Thursday night again. But in the meantime, tell your friends and listen to our show. And good night, everybody.